Hey, everybody. Welcome back. It's another edition of the Mainland Podcast. We are at episode 25, I think, now. And that's kind of a milestone. Not really. We've only done 25 of these things. I'm Michael Citro from themainland.com. Of course, that's what the podcast is all about. Orlando City Soccer. Joining me this week, a couple of first-timers, a couple of our writers, Daniel McGann and also Gavin Eubank. Guys, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing fantastic. Glad to be here. Glad to talk about some Orlando City Soccer.
I'm doing just fine myself, too. Got some baseball on over here. The podcast on. Looking forward to this.
All right. Well, you know, don't watch the baseball game. You're here to do a job. All right. So let's just dive into it. Orlando City had a not good week with the 4-1 loss at Toronto. Come home. Figure maybe we could get well against formerly last place Philadelphia, and we get our first 0-0 draw in MLS. So 1 point out of a possible six against a couple of teams we probably needed more than that against. Daniel, I'm going to start with you. Your thoughts overall on the Toronto match in terms of, surprising the way that it turned out. I mean, there was no Kaká, and that was kind of the way they played the last time Kaká didn't play. But are you a little bit surprised they didn't come out with a little more fire?
I would say that I'm surprised and a little upset, knowing that where we were on the precipice of getting back into that playoff push. I figured the team would have a little bit more fire in their belly. I know it was an away game, and you're missing your captain. You're missing kind of that spark player in the midfield who drives you forward, but that's whenever other guys should have stepped up. And unfortunately, in that game, we kind of saw a lackluster performance. We didn't see a lot of energy. We had some players that looked good again. Luke Bowden looked good playing back and forth. Of course, he scored that goal. We had a few chances, but we just looked like, I don't want to call it jet lag or we didn't want to be there. We didn't come out firing on any cylinders, really.
Gavin, this is an issue, and obviously it's been necessitated by injury, by circumstances. But when your attacking wings are a left back and either Eric Avila or Lewis Neal, either one, take your pick, it's probably not optimal for scoring a whole lot of goals. Is my thought. This recent lack of goal scoring probably has to have a lot to do with the starting attacking wingers.
It seemed like early in the season, I agree with you there. It seemed like early in the season that everything would be kind of set in stone, like either Breck Shea or Carlos Rivas would be there. You'd have Kevin Molino. And then as soon as Molino went down, it kind of really changed the whole dynamic of how this team was going to shape out, because now you have Eric Avila. Obviously, he's not a big scoring threat. He had the goal against LA, but that was coming off an assist or header or whatever. But, obviously Molino gave you a lot there. Lewis Neal's not going to give you a lot there. Avila's not going to give you a lot there. But you saw even the 4-2-3-1 against Philly, where it was, I believe, Lewis Neal and Darwin Serra. Those guys hardly ever left the middle of the field. You rarely saw them getting forward. You can't play effectively getting forward and score goals when your two wingers are not involved offensively. And obviously we're seeing how big of a problem that's going to be. Hopefully Adrian Winter is going to help out a lot with that. We saw him against Philly. I wouldn't say he looked great, but he looked, energetic and kind of ready to get out there and play with his new team. Hopefully we see more from him. Breck Shea is going to be back soon. Rivas, if he returns to the form he was playing at, I think we'll start to see a little bit better there. But yeah, it's a problem they need to hopefully get turned around soon.
Yeah, Adrian Heath went with the 4-3-3 again in Toronto after having success with it against Columbus. Not nearly the same amount of success with, without Kaká. The 4-3-3 did not work nearly as well. Having a very little service to Lahren, but Daniel, I want to talk a little bit about Kyle Lahren, because this is the first time since May that he's gone back-to-back games without scoring a goal in MLS. And I think that Bendick's big save early on him maybe set the tone a little bit for that game, because he had a chance for just 4 minutes into the game to put Orlando City on top, and you know, he had a little bit of a heavy touch that forced him to kind of go a little wider than he wanted to, but he still had a chance to pull that back and get it in the far side. Bendick came out and made a diving save. For me, a big moment in the match. What do you think?
Well, I mean, we have to remember Kyle Larin's a rookie, right? He's fresh into Major League Soccer, and he's going to have his ups and downs. The reason why there's, you know, discrepancies between a good player and a great player is consistency. And he's not necessarily there yet consistently. He's going to have those trends where he's, you know, scoring goals, like he had games back to back to back where he's putting the ball in the back of the net, and then he's going to go through droughts as well. Now, that save from Bendick, he could have had another goal that game. That was a great run by him, great ball to put him through. But he just needs to get better service. We're going to tie that back to having, you know, a left back at playing left mid or in a 4-3-3, and Avila, who is not necessarily attack-minded whatsoever. He's not serving good balls into the box, and Turner, unfortunately, didn't have the same type of attacking player that Ramos has had at right back. So you're looking at Kyle Larin basically doing it on his own for the past two games, really. And it shows whenever we don't have many shots on goal. I think what we have one shot on target against Philly, that's just not going to do it. And Kyle's going to need a little help getting more balls into the box and helping him through, rather than us just hoping that he's going to do something magnificent.
Yeah, and wouldn't you know it, a 0-0 draw against Philadelphia, the Union came into that game yielding the most goals in MLS this season, Orlando City the third most. And, of course, it was a 0-0 draw. Gavin, it's got to be a big disappointment to only get one real good scoring chance against Philadelphia Union, as bad as their back line has been this year, and they didn't have Adu in the lineup.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you have one of the worst defenses in the league, one of the worst teams in the league, really. It's playing at home. You'd think Orlando would be able to get something, but it just seems kind of weird how they've been struggling there lately, where they haven't scored. They scored, shutout in three of their last four home matches there. You know, that's obviously a concern. Kaká wasn't in one of them. You know, the injuries have been all over the place, but overall it was a game they should have won. I don't know, on paper at least, you know, obviously the way they played didn't say they should have won the game, but you never know. It's something, and again, hopefully you want to see get better moving forward, and it's not going to get easier when they go to Seattle this week, you think.
No, and, you know, it's just hard to look at that bench and find any spark, really, the way that the injuries have happened, and we've even had more injuries this week. We had Connor Donovan makes his MLS debut against Philadelphia, and it lasts all of 10 minutes before he blows out his knee. He got his ACL, his MCL, and his meniscus, so the trifecta for Connor. And he's going to be out quite some time, probably into next season. And it's a shame for him, because he actually was coming along quite well. Tommy Redding, though, came on and did a pretty good job. Daniel, I thought that Tommy, you know, that the moment was probably going to be a little bit too big for him, but he actually played a very, very strong game for Orlando City.
You know, he had some nerves getting out there at first. You could kind of tell he was a little indecisive for the first few minutes, but just like any center back or defensive midfielder, once you get those first couple challenges in, those first couple 1v1s and aerials, you kind of settle into the game, and especially for a defender in the heart of the defense right there, I think it helped a lot having Colin next to him, somebody who's got a lot of MLS experience. But Tommy Redding really held his own from coming in after Donovan's pretty horrific injury, gotta say. And Tally Hall really stepped up as well. I mean, that 10-12 minute onslaught that he went through really put his staple on the game there. But Tommy's, we've got to give him all the credit in the world, because for his age, stepping into a role like that, he did a fantastic job of it.
Yeah, he sure did. And you know, he did have a few moments where it obviously wasn't a perfect debut, but he had made some mistakes, but he recovered very well. He did have a very, very important header to clear a ball. It was going to be a dangerous ball into the box late in the game. Tally Hall really was high on him after the match. Gavin, what did you think of the experiment of putting Corey Ash at right back against Philadelphia Union? I seemed to have some issues on that right side.
I didn't really see much that was worth pointing out. You know, I thought they played to him a lot over there on the left, on the right. You know, obviously he didn't have a lot to work with Darren Serrin, but I thought for the most part he played a pretty okay game. He's played there before with Houston. I'm not sure how much in the past. I'd have to go back and look that up, but ideally you don't want to put him there. You know, you'd like to have Rafael Ramos back, but it wasn't terrible, I would say.
So reinforcements are on the way. We've already seen Adrian Venter, and I think we'll see more of him as he's acclimated into the team a little bit. You know, he hadn't played since May, came in after less than a week with a new group of people, probably didn't even know everybody's name. And I thought he showed a real good spark off the bench. He really hustled, and he made some things happen considering the fact that he didn't really know who he was playing with yet. He didn't really know much about the system or anything like that, or MLS even. I thought he came on and he provided something. He actually he made the game better, which was, you know, basically what you want out of your bench. David Mateos is in town now. He's going to get a full week of practice in before the Seattle game. So reinforcements there, and also we're hearing Rafael Ramos back at practice. Right back should be solidified if Rafa can play on Sunday against Seattle, which we certainly hope that's the case. So Daniel, why don't we just go ahead and get your man of the match for Toronto? I know it's a tough game to pick somebody from, but you got to look for the silver lining in the dark cloud. So tell me who stood out to you against Toronto.
Well, I mean, I would have to say, you know, not just the goal aside, but how Luke Bowden has kind of taken a little bit of the offensive troubles that we had and carried us the past couple of games. He's been putting the ball into the box as much as possible. He's been playing wide left as much as possible, but we saw in Toronto him come across the middle. He took a beautiful curled shot right into the corner and even looked a little hesitant on it, like he wasn't quite sure as a defender if I'm supposed to shoot right here, but he ended up putting it in the back of the net, and that was a highlight of the game. But a big thing about Luke Bowden that I've noticed is he's got a little creative spark in him from a defender, and that's something that we definitely are lacking at the moment, especially when we're playing without Kaká and with some of the other players that we have on the field. Usually we run with three defensive midfielders, but Luke would be my man of the match for sure against Toronto.
Gavin, your man of the match up in Toronto?
I'm going to have to agree with Daniel here. Luke Bowden, obviously, he played well. I didn't watch the full game, like I admitted to you guys, but from the time that I watched, he was one of the better players. Goal, of course, goes a long way. It's hard to pick a man of the match when the whole team wasn't good at all, but for me, it would have to be Luke Bowden.
Yeah, it was a disappointing effort overall. I do also agree with you guys that Bowden was the bright spot in the lineup. Just weren't getting anything from the right side all night. Laren had a couple of opportunities, but he didn't finish on them. You can't really give it to anybody on the back line when you give up four goals, or the defensive midfield for that matter. So Bowden kind of wins it by default for me as well. The goal was good, certainly. MLS opens his MLS account. And he had actually played some pretty decent defensive midfield on the left side as well, breaking up play and starting attacks the other way. So I would agree with that. Let's go back to Daniel and get your man of the match for the 0-0 draw against Philadelphia. For me, it's a pretty easy choice. Let's see what you have to say.
Well, I'm gonna go beyond your easy choice, and I'm going to look at Arilla Collin, because – when Connor Donovan got injured and Tommy Redding had to step in, it's difficult for a back line to introduce somebody that doesn't exactly get a lot of minutes playing with the first four in practice, and also is that young. And I thought Collin, for the mistakes that Redding made, which they're gonna make mistakes, he stepped up to cover a lot of ground. He was great in the air. There were a few issues, of course, that he had throughout the match, distributing-wise, but I thought he stepped up and really held that line together.
All right, Gavin, Philadelphia, man of the match.
Tally Hall, without question. You know, he is probably the main reason why we're sitting here talking about him in the little draw and not a 2-3-0 game. You know, he had those big saves late in the match. That just not a lot of goalkeepers are going to make. You know, he's obviously a couple of them are right there at him, but he's still the reaction to get there was fantastic. You know, Bill Meade obviously stole the spotlight on Saturday with his performance against Montreal, but Tally Hall was a very close second for that goalkeeper and obviously the player of the match for me.
Yeah, I got to go with Tally Hall. He was really clutch down the stretch, especially in a team that hadn't had a clean sheet since the end of June. You know, it was nice to see the goalkeeper step up and keep the team in the match throughout. And he had a save, I think it was against Christian Maidana, I think, which I thought was worthy of consideration for MLS Save of the Week, but he was not one of the five finalists for MLS Save of the Week. So, you know,
are you
I guess
talking about that great tip in the 80th minute over the bar?
Yeah, that might have been it. It was a fairly close range shot, as I recall, and it was a good reaction save. I thought it was a really key moment in the game. I could see bad things happening if Donovan Ricketts had been in between the sticks for that last stretch of the match, but luckily he was not. So nothing against Donovan, but I think his best days are behind him.
Yeah.
And you know, I think Tally Hall really showed his class on Saturday night. So you know, we've got Sunday. You know, it just doesn't get any easier. You go from playing Philadelphia, who you think you know should be able to get 3 points against, to traveling all the way across the country to go up against Seattle. Which, okay, Seattle's form has been really, really bad the last month or so, but they are getting reinforcements as well. They've just added a designated player. They're getting Obafemi Martins back. Just, you know, the timing couldn't be worse for Orlando City for Seattle to get these guys back. But we're going to bring in somebody now to help us break down this Seattle match. We're going to why don't we just bring in our special guest for the week and talk about this upcoming Sunday night extravaganza out at CenturyLink Field. All right, joining us now from Sounder at Heart, we have Dave Clark. Dave's one of the managing editors over there, and they are one of our sister SB Nation blogs. They cover the Sounders, so who better to have on this week's podcast? Dave, welcome to the Mainland Podcast.
Proud to be with you.
You know, I'm really glad that you were able to come on this week because, you know, I think it's fair to say that as the, you know, the Supporter Shield winners last year and one of the teams that sort of serves as the face of MLS along with Galaxy and a couple others. I think this was one of the matches that we really looked forward to all year here in our inaugural season with Orlando City. Going up to Seattle, going up to CenturyLink, and you know, we kind of didn't envision it being like this though. We kind of thought, you know, we're gonna be playing you know, a team on top of the Western Division or Western Conference, and we're going to be hopefully battling for one of those, you know, mid-playoff spots in the East. But here we find ourselves in seventh and playing, you know, a Seattle team that's had a really, really rough patch over the last month. What is going on up in Seattle in terms of the fans? Are the supporters? They're probably not hitting the panic button just yet, but how are they feeling about the way Seattle's been playing lately?
Well, I think if you asked us just after the loss, the most recent loss, that was to the Galaxy. If you asked the fans after that and if you took away all the rumored signings, then they would have been hitting the panic button. But right now, there's a ton of excitement that revolves around three new players that have been added within the last week. And a total of four that were added during the transfer window. So right now, despite the results, people are still the people that pay attention are extraordinarily excited.
Dave, glad to have you here. First of all, I wanted to ask you about how Seattle feels having another team in the league, albeit in the Eastern Conference, that can draw huge crowds. I know Seattle you know, necessarily been the darling of the of Major League Soccer since their inception, and how they draw numbers every week that are fantastic crowds. Orlando's got a little competition. Have you had the chance of seeing an Orlando game this year? And what do you think of our atmosphere?
Watched a couple on television. I like what's going on there. It's been great to see. I've got family down in Orlando, so at first I was kind of surprised at the crowds. I wouldn't have expected it from that community. But I'm really proud. I'm not going to be the type of fan that gets jealous of attendance records or anything like that. For me, I want every team in the league drawing what Seattle does right now, and I want Seattle drawing 67,000. To me, that's how we see the sport continue to grow. That's kind of my goal. I know the Sounders might be a little bit jealous. They might feel threatened long term, you know, because you guys, kind of like Seattle, will shortly have the idea where you can have essentially expansion of your seating, where your normal match will be in that brand new palace that's getting built down there. And then you'll still be able to bump up to the Citrus Bowl as needed. I'm excited for that.
Dave, you know, a lot of people like to draw comparisons about Orlando City in their first season. Seattle is the most recent expansion team to make the playoffs in their first year. But, you know, Orlando City, we're on that pace. You know, they're still battling for that. But, you know, they've hit a bump in the road with all these injuries and stuff. Do you see any kind of comparison between the two teams in their first year? And is there anything you can kind of say to Orlando City fans to reassure them that it's not totally over yet, even though, or in their first year?
It's definitely not over. At any point in the season, you basically just want to be within 9 points going into that last month. If you're within 9 points of the playoffs, anything can still happen in the month of October. It can happen. You go on a run, somebody else doesn't, boom, you're in. So there's no reason to give up hope. Heck, I just watched a team go 1-8 in their last 9 games, and there's no reason to give up hope. So for Orlando City, I think what you've got is you still got all the talent that got you those wins early in the year. So the little slump that you're going through right now isn't a big deal. I wouldn't focus on that. Just focus on what you guys need to know, that the fact that you've got, heck, you still got live local soccer. Making the playoffs in year one is, again, you pointed out, two teams have done it, Seattle and Chicago. And Chicago did it in an environment where 8 of 10 teams made the playoffs. So that isn't necessarily what exists now. I think Orlando's got a lot of stuff going for it. They got an organization, in my opinion, that shows how you should do expansion, that follows the same model that Seattle and Portland and Vancouver and Montreal did, where you laid a strong foundation, both in the business side and in the soccer side. And any team that starts up should continue that. I've talked to other teams that are starting out, the Atlantas and the LA FC people, fans of those teams. I'm like, well, what you do right now is you get a USL team immediately, you get an academy immediately, and you lay the foundation. Because if you don't have that foundation, you're going to spend your first year building that foundation. So you're not making the playoffs. So, you know, cut it shorter. You get that 2-3 year head start. As soon as any team in the league, as soon as they get awarded an expansion side, should immediately start a USL side and immediately start an academy team. And I'm glad that you guys did it. And I think that has a large reason to do with why you'll challenge for a playoff spot.
Yeah, Dave, let's turn our attention to Sunday. It's, you know, this is a big nationally televised match. There's going to be a lot of excitement, and obviously Obafemi Martins looks like he's going to return. Maybe not Dempsey, but it looks like Seattle finally will have some of its offensive weapons on the field that it have been missing for a while. How do you see this match unfolding? I mean, neither team has really been in their best run of form for the season.
Well, for Seattle, it's all about getting talent back on the field. I was going over the numbers, and to put it in perspective, you started off talking about the Supporters Shield winning team last year. And five players that are still on the team that were starters during the Supporters Shield win are no longer starters if everybody's back and healthy. That's how much talent they've added in the past year. So if you look at it that way, if you look at during this really, I call them the dire days, ever since Clint Dempsey ripped up that red card or ripped up that referee's notebook, it's been the dire days out here. If you look at during that time, the 18 then compared to the 18 now, 10 players are new, essentially, because Clint Dempsey was gone. He's still not going to be back. That's fortunate for you. But the new DP signing, Nelson Hedo Valdez, who has played with Sammy Martins before, is almost certainly going to start and going to start up top. Obasemi Martins is almost certainly going to start. Re-signing Eric Freeburg is in the middle. Brad Evans, the national teamer, is going to be in the middle. Neither of them were there for most of those dire days. So you're starting to look at all the change. You know, just look at the spine. Heck, they could play Ramon Torres, the new Panamanian center back, and alongside Chad Marshall. If they do all of that, Stephen Fry missed half of the dire days because he had a shoulder injury. And you look at the spine, and of the six guys along the spine, only one of them started the majority of the downstreak. So if Seattle can gel, if they can put themselves together in a way that plays well, they'll be as good or better than they were in the middle of June and all of July.
Yeah, Dave, the additions that you made with Nelson Valdez, Roman Torres, Andreas Avancic, like those are some fantastic players that you're bringing into your club. And Orlando made a few moves ourselves with Winter and David Mateos at center back. But let's get back to this weekend necessarily. You're at home. You're going to miss Clint Dempsey. He looks like he's going to be out. Martin's going to be up top. What do you see the game looking like from Flo? Are you expecting an attacking style of soccer from both Orlando and Seattle? We're both on that playoff edge, at sitting right there at seven, waiting, trying to get into the sixth spot to get into the playoffs. Are you hoping for a lot of goals this weekend?
Yeah, I need goals. I've seen three goals in the past 2 months. I mean, that's pretty dire. It's pathetic. So I need goals. So Seattle's going to push. Seattle's going to push. They're going to be at home, and the old talents and the new talents are, you know, they need to declare that they're the Sounders that win trophies, not the Sounders that struggle to make the playoffs. So they're going to push forward. One of the great advantages for you guys, I didn't even talk about this, and I probably should have, is Osvaldo Alonso, who is a former best 11 defensive midfielder, is not going to be back. And I'm kind of panicky a little bit, because the only player on this roster that's capable of handling Kaká is out. And that's going to force what's likely going to be Brad Evans and Eric Freeburg probably have to frankly, they have to do almost an American football type of thing and give him some bracket coverage, because there's no way either one of them or in a standard zonal system are going to be able to handle Kaká. So I'm pretty much assured that Orlando will get one or two goals, and it won't be because of systemic defensive failures. It'll be because you've got one of the greatest players in the modern game.
Well, I'm going to jump back in on that, Dave. I just want to say that Orlando has been playing we play a possession style of soccer. You know, we try to mm-hmm. keep the ball throughout the match. If you look at the numbers, we average over 52 to 53% either home or away whenever we play. And we try to just put the pressure into the other half of the field so we can build that pressure and get good chances. We're lacking a lot of attack on our wings, of course. Kevin Molino going down at the beginning of the year. Carlos Rivas not necessarily taking the role on the left. Brett Shea being injured. So we're basically playing with a makeshift attacking third. But how do you see that possession battle going this weekend? And like you said, Kaká is a player that plays on a different world than most others. How do you see him being stopped? I mean, is it gonna fall to your back four to step up and stop him moving the ball around like he enjoys doing so much? Or is this game just going to be all out from the get-go?
I think it's going to be more all out because with Kaká, and then I'll get back to kind of the countering possession styles because that when Seattle was great, that's what they did. So we'll get back to that. But first, to you with Kaká, it's got to be on Freeburg and Evans, and the reason for that is that neither Ramon Torres nor Chad Marshall are known for their speed. No matter how you measure speed, neither of them are necessarily fast. They're two towering center backs. They're great. They're high quality. If I had to put together a list of the top five that play in CONCACAF right now in pro leagues and CONCACAF, they'd both be on it. But stylistically, they're still going to be learning how to match up. So I don't want one of them stepping out into Kaká's space, leaving the other one on Kyle Larin. That's doom. I'm scared. I don't want it. So it's going to have to be on Evans, and it's going to have to be on Freeburg and the post. Probably have to sit a little deeper than usual, and they'll deal with it that way. When Seattle played at their best, they like to possess in the central third. They did not march up the field in kind of a Barcelona-y type of possession where, you know, they'd use their short passes and just keep marching up, capturing 10 to 20 yards of space at a time. They did a lot of knocking it sideways right along the center line practically and just waiting for a mistaken coverage when they would spring Clint Dempsey or Obafemi Martins with a long ball or a through ball. It's not necessarily – I use the word long ball there, but normally when you hear long ball and MLS, you're thinking 50-yard passes from the back line or the keeper. And this wasn't that way. I mean, they would play a 30-yard pass from the center line to spring their forwards. It was really exciting. They put up a lot of goals back when they were great, which was more than 2 months ago. I'm getting tired of talking. Oh, these 2 months have been horrible. But, you know, if they play how they did when they were at their best, it's going to be really exciting. You mentioned some weakness in the attack on the wings. Seattle likes to get both fullbacks forward sometimes at the same time. That's Dylan Remick, who's a speedy left back who came out of Brown University, a little bit unheralded because he played at one of the Ivy League schools. And then former Premiership and English Champion League, or English Championship side, Tyrone Mears is the right back. And he has replaced DeAndre Yedlin. Not nearly as fast, but his passing is wonderful. It's almost like watching what DeAndre Yedlin will become when you watch how Mears plays right now. So I think those guys can help exploit it. At this point, who plays on the wings will really depend on who's healthy. If Seattle plays a Lamar Nagel and a Tomas on the outside, both of them like to cut in, and so that'll leave the fullbacks to provide with.
Yeah, Dave, before we let you get out of here, I mean, for my money, I think the big key for me is to see how Orlando City's center backs deal with Obafemi Martins. I think that Aurelien Collin is going to be either paired with 18-year-old Tommy Redding, unless Seb Hines can get back, or maybe David Mateos, who's not been with the team, but only arrived with the team Saturday. So I think that's going to be, for me, the key matchup. And I think, as well, you're going to see the defensive midfielders are going to have to be on point. Darwin Serin and Chris Nikita are going to have to be on point against Seattle. For me, that's what I see as the key matchup in the game. Where do you see the key matchup on the field? And, you know, before we let you get out here, obviously we have to get your – we make everybody do this. You have to give your game prediction.
I think it's going to be on Oba. He hasn't played in a very long time. He went down with an injury against in that same Portland match where Clint Dempsey went insane. That's when we lost Oba as well. So it was a wonderful day. So if he's back and he's back doing what he does, the man's probably only 5'6". I don't really care what the league lists him at. I'm 5'6", and I look him right in the eye. But he is kind of like Charles Barkley in the NBA, was able to win all those rebounds, despite the fact that he was pretty darn short for an NBA player. Although Sonny Martins does the same thing with his hold-up play. He's got that low center of gravity. His thighs are as big as many players' chests. I mean, he's just, he is rock hard. He is an example of the ideal physique. So he'll have to be the key. When we got him, I discovered that basically Olafemi Martins is the player that's ideally built for MLS. Fast and physical type of play. He has quick thoughts and all of that to exploit it. But if you say that MLS is about being athletic, Olafemi Martins is one of the five best athletes in the league. And he is a player who's gone to World Cups based off of his ability to play soccer as well. So it's a great combination. He'll be able to rejoin with guys like Lamar Nagel, who he's played with here in Seattle, and then probably with Nelson Valdez, Hedo Valdez, who those two, Valdez's welcome to the team video, he's sitting there like hugging Oba and playing with Oba's hair. I wouldn't conceive of touching Olafemi Martins' hair. I'd probably break my hand, like, just by touching him. But Valdez was immediately friendly. They're like, hey, what's up? I miss you. It's been a while. And that, to me, is what screams that this organization, and for the next couple weeks until Clint Dempsey and Oswaldo Alonso are back, they're going to ride on the shoulders of Olafemi Martins. And I'm happy about that. Last year, they rode the shoulders of Olafemi Martins. He was the runner-up in the MVP race.
All right, well, Dave, we need you to predict what's going to happen on Sunday when Orlando City takes the field against Seattle Sounders.
All right, I'm not going to cheat. I'm not going to give you a different prediction than I did in a written exchange. I'll go with the same one. So I'm feeling like a 3-1. I don't think that Seattle can keep Orlando off the board, particularly with their weaknesses in defense. And I'm so desperate for goals that it might be more hope in reality with the goal side of things, but I need to see some goals, so I'm just going to demand it with my own will.
Well, we can certainly relate to your desire for goals. I mean, aside from the aberration of a 5-2 win over Columbus a couple of weeks ago, it's been a pretty big drought for Columbus
five goals though.
Orlando City.
You know how far back you have to go for the Sounders to have scored five total goals?
Yeah, I know.
More than 2 months. I felt a lot of pain as a Seattle sports fan. I watched the Seahawks win only two games in a year. Watched the Mariners twice lose 100 or more games just recently. I watched the Sonics get dismantled in order to lose enough games that people would not go to games. Both of the colleges out here had a zero win seasons for their college football team. I've seen a lot of losses, and for some reason this Sounders stuff is hitting me harder, despite the fact that they're still a playoff team. These past two months have reminded me that I'm a Seattle sports fan, and I will feel pain. I will feel it often.
Yeah, it's a testament to the start that Seattle got off to, that they're still in the playoffs the way the Western Conference has gone, but it's interestingly enough, Orlando City has played very well against the Western Conference teams. They just haven't done as well as they should against the Eastern Conference. So it should be an interesting matchup. Really looking forward to it. And Dave Clark from Sounder at Heart, why don't you tell people where they can find you on Twitter and on the internet?
Yeah, so I'm the founder and managing editor of SounderAtHeart.com, which is our little neck of the woods over there on SB Nation. You can find that on Facebook, simply Facebook/SounderAtHeart. And then the place where you can find myself, which is on Twitter, is @betterthan, BEDIRTHAN. And I'll just warn you there's a lot of geeky stuff I do on the @betterthan. It's not just the soccer thing. I talk about D&D and fantasy fiction and Middle Eastern politics, and on Sundays during the NFL season, I live tweet a punter every single one of the Seahawks punters touches. So if you follow that better, then you're warned right now. It's weird.
All right. And you can also follow the Sounder at Heart Twitter feed as well. So, yeah. Dave, thanks for being our guest here on the Mainland Podcast. And, we'll see what happens on Sunday.
Yeah, my pleasure, and I hope you guys crush the Eastern Conference for the rest of the year and let us win this one.
All right, thanks so much. Well, it's just about time to call this a completed podcast, and we want to thank our guest, Dave Clark from Sounder at Heart, once again. Appreciate him coming on and giving us the Seattle fan perspective. But before we get out of here, guys, we obviously still have a little bit of business to do. We've got a little segment we're going to call Ask TML. We've solicited some questions on Twitter, and we've got a few of them in the hopper, and we'll see if we can pull those up and ask or answer some questions. Got a couple questions from our friends up in Louisville, actually. So this should be interesting. But so if you would like to ask us anything, and you can, just like a Reddit Ask Me Anything thing, you know, it's you can just hit us up on Twitter and just give us the hashtag AskTML and ask your question. Or you can email us themainland@gmail.com. It's themainland at gmail.com. First question comes to us from the Louisville Heretics account. And Louisville wants to know, and I have a very strong opinion about this, Count Chocula, Booberry, or Frankenberry? So Daniel, we'll start with you.
Count Chocula all the way. I don't understand how you could possibly choose anything else whatsoever.
Okay. Gavin, this might be before your time, but what do you have an answer?
I'm going to say none. None of the above. I stick with the Cocoa Puffs and the Cookie Crisp. That's my cereal.
All right, so we got a couple chocolate lovers here. I'm going to say Frankenberry because I think when you go with fake artificial flavoring, I think it's harder to screw up strawberry than it is to screw up a lot of other flavors. So I always kind of liked Frankenberry, so I'm going to go with that. So there you go. Thanks for the question. We have a question here from the Community Sport Report. Wants to know, will Tony Cassio ever play for Orlando? Daniel.
I hope so. I harp on this back to I'm a big proponent of the expansion draft for teams growing through the expansion draft, and it would be a little upsetting to see that pick go to a waste if he never steps on the field for Orlando City. He would have been fantastic for us this year, knowing that he's can play either left mid or right mid and either a 4-2-3-1 or a 4-3-3, and he's got speed on the outside. He's got a good foot to put the ball in the box. We really missed him coming back from that injury and then picking up his back injury that he has now, and hopefully he gets healthy.
Gavin, what's your guts telling you about Tony Cassio?
I'm still trying to figure out if this guy's alive. I have not seen him anywhere in weeks, months, but, you know, it's kind of sad, you know, when players deal with these injuries. Obviously, a back is not something where you just kind of sit it off for a couple of weeks and hope it gets better. You gotta, in a sport like this, you gotta, you know, wait till it's 100%. You don't want to risk it, you know, further problems down the road after your playing career. But, you know, like Daniel said, he would have been a good piece, especially with the way we were losing players left and right this summer. You know, would have helped. But I'm leaning a little bit towards no right now as far as seeing him play again.
Yeah, I agree. He really his absence really handcuffed Adrian Heath this year. I think you know, this is a guy who could have come in and given some serious minutes after Molino went down. But you know, the back is a funny part of your body in terms of once you start having problems with it, it's really, really hard to get it back to 100%. And I just don't see – first of all, I don't know what his contract situation is, so I don't know if he's on a multi-year or if this is the last year. But I have to say if he doesn't have another year on his contract, I don't see him coming back because I just think they'll just move on. If he does have another year left, then I think we'll – you know, we possibly could see him in 2016. And I have seen Tony Cassio recently at the stadium. He came in before – I believe it was the Columbus game. It might have been the game before that, but I remember seeing him at a recent game, and I was talking to Paul Tenorio from the Orlando Sentinel before the match, and we were just kind of hanging out where the players come in, and we both kind of raised our eyebrows, and Tony walked in, and he looked fine. he was bending over and taking pictures with kids, so it didn't look like his back was bothering him. But, hopefully he gets well, and it might be just one of those situations. You know, it's kind of weird because Adrian Heath was saying he was getting close to returning at one point, yep. And then you didn't hear anything about him. And then, you know, weeks and weeks gone by, and then maybe he just had a relapse or something and just decided to shut him down for the year. I don't know, but it certainly has hurt the team not having a player of his caliber and his qualities because the team was certainly needing those qualities on the field.
Yeah.
Louisville Heretics also want to know, when will there be an official Heretics interview? That will be when Jeff Milby says so. Jeff Milby says so, there will be an official Heretics interview. Also, I'm not sure what makes it official.
I think just being on it makes it official.
I think the last question here is from Vale on Twitter. Wants to know, do you think the new stadium will be ready on time? And I think we can already answer that it will not be ready for the start of 2016. We know that it may be ready for the very end of next season. We were told when they unveiled the designs that it was, I think they said, a 12 to 14 month process from that point. So very, very late next season is the earliest we should expect that. Are either of you guys hearing anything different? I'm thinking maybe if the team makes the playoffs next year.
That's exactly what I've been hearing and what looks like the time frame is going to be built out for us. If not, I don't think they want to open up with just the last game of the season type idea. They'll probably open up with something they can draw, you know, more tickets, of course. They want to have that big gala, that big event. And the playoffs would definitely be that. If not, then they would probably just push the opening to the beginning of the season after, so 2017.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. Yeah, Gavin, do you have any other ideas about the new stadium?
Yeah, like Daniel was saying, I think it's one of the things, if the team's not in the playoff race, they're probably shouldn't bother trying to open up the stadium next year and creating all that chaos and, you know, moving the season tickets and all that kind of stuff. And when there's really nothing to get excited about, but, you know, if we're going into the playoffs and you want to have that big shiny thing to build even more momentum going in to draw fans and kind of stuff, I think we'll see that. But I mean, regardless of when it's going to happen, it's going to be a great stadium. I can't wait to get into it.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to playing the team playing on grass at home for sure. Especially, and I bet guys like Connor Donovan would be happy to play on grass next year as well.
That's too early for that joke.
it's too soon. Yeah, I agree. So, you know, before we get out of here, we have to have our sure to be incorrect, predictions for next week for the weekend. We don't recommend that you take our predictions and run to Vegas with all your life savings, because we have proven time and time again that we can be incredibly wrong. So I'm going to start with Daniel and get your prediction for final score, goal scorers, all that stuff from this Sunday at Seattle.
I'm gonna definitely come from the optimistic point of view here, and I'm going to say that we're going to head to Seattle, and we're not going to have a problem playing on the turf. We're not going to have a problem playing in front of tons of fans. We do that week in and week out here at home. I think the atmosphere is going to drive us to a 2-1 win, and I see Kaká getting man of the match and putting the goal in the back of the net.
All right. Gavin, what do you see happening on Sunday?
I've been going back and forth in my mind because you got Seattle. They're struggling, but they're playing at home, and Orlando City can often get on slow starts at home or on the road. But they play well against the Western Conference team, so it's going to be kind of one of those things where we're either going to see a really good game or another 0-0 draw because these teams are both not playing well at all. But I think in the end, Orlando's going to slip by 1-0. You know, Kaká's going to do something great. It's going to score, and it's going to see all the headlines on ESPN since they've already taken the time to broadcast the game. But, yeah, you know, it should be a good match. You know, great crowd, obviously. So I'm excited to see this one, and hopefully they pull it out.
All right, well, I am going to say that this team is going to come out and play very, very hard. I think Kyle Larin will finally get that rookie goal-scoring record. But I also think that Obafemi Martins will be too much for our back line. And I see this one maybe playing out to a 2-2 draw, which I think actually would be a very good result for Orlando City at Seattle. So That's what I think we're going to see on Sunday. So there you have it. We have no chance of being right, any of us. So, so that's going to be it. That's the podcast. And you can always follow us on Twitter, please. We are at The Mainland, and M-A-N-E, not M-A-I-N, because we are fond of lion puns. Also, we are at themainland.com. So if you're catching us on iTunes, please visit our blog and read what we have to say. We have a lot of really talented writers who have a lot of strong opinions, and they do a lot of good reporting as well. So we'd like to see you there. And also, if you are on iTunes, please rate us and leave us some feedback, and we would appreciate that. So without further ado, we're going to get out of here. Next week, we will come back, and we will talk about this Seattle match, and we go back to Toronto. So we'll talk again about Toronto FC. So for Daniel McGann and Gavin Eubank, a couple of newbies to the Mainland Podcast, I'm Michael Citro saying, go City!